on my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my years, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome. Welcome to the Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. We ask that you please keep your feet off the kneelers in front of you. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Mike. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that might and will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Some suggestions for the meditation is to breathe in God, breathe out self. What worked for me in the beginning is I try to breathe in light and breathe out darkness. So if everybody's ready, let's start the meditation. Say the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, there's cards in the pews right in front of you. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those whom are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who still suffer from alcoholism. I have asked Mark to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's important to know what one is. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off.
My name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing members of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means a rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous, pages 567 and 568.
All right, again, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please turn your phones off, set the meeting mode. Tonight's speaker is Peter M. It's truly been an honor so far and a great experience, so let's welcome Peter.
Before we get going, there was a gentleman who was a member of this group, I believe his name was Hunter. Hunter was a young fella who didn't find his way and unfortunately passed away. So if we can just be kind enough and take a moment of silence and just make some prayers and give him credit for what he tried. Okay. My name is Peter, a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, thank the group for having me. A couple more weeks to go, and I think Marion comes in next, I think so. I was sharing with Michael earlier, Marion's doing a conference this weekend up in New Jersey, and some folks saw her name and figured I was going to be up there, and they asked me to participate if I would speak on this thing called an old-timers panel. And I was honored that they would ask me, and I realized, I was sharing with Michael, only in Alcoholics Anonymous would I be honored to be considered an old-timer. Anywhere else, I'm looking to go to war with you if you call me an old-timer. I hate when the little kids on the street call you mister. It means you have your day in the sun, it's gone. So I guess they call me an old-timer. I feel like I'm an 18-year-old knucklehead most of the times, but glad to be here. Whether they call me an old-timer or a bunch of other things I won't repeat from this podium, I've been called over the years. I have found out that with all our years together or individually going to meetings, working with the sponsor, doing step work, doing our prayer, doing our meditation, all of that, do I somehow think at some point that I'm non-alcoholic at this point? Like, I don't think like an alcoholic. I'm not a prey to alcoholism, even though I'm doing all this work. Now, we get recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and obviously there's a shift in our life, a huge shift for many of us. But what I can never forget is I'm still alcoholic. Our book says, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And what we can, and I've watched this with some folks, and I've been guilty of it. I remember the first time coming out of the work, and it's 10, 11, 12, thinking I was somehow beyond being flawed with my thinking, somehow being flawed in my character. Somehow I've risen above the people who are just coming in the door or just starting to do the step work, which can be a rude awakening for most of us, because the answer to that question is, no matter how great we think we might have gone, have become, or how we've risen above everyone, or how spiritual we think we may have become, what happens to a guy like me once I pick up a drink? Is that I'm going to pick up the second drink? And the drink doesn't care how much inventory I've written or how many times I've prayed. Once I pick up a drink, the second drink follows, and then I'm on a drunk again. And that has been a humbling consideration for me over the years. And I am so grateful for sponsorship that has been able to reel me in when I start to spread the wings just a little too far. And it's only because of great teachers, enlightened men that cared enough about me and less about my feelings to do things like that. And so when I get to do these workshops, and quite frankly, in most areas of my life, because I fall short, I usually say I don't prepare for these things. I don't go home and cram and come back and try to lay some good stuff on you. The only preparation I have is what I did yesterday, the day before that, and so on, and here to share that experience with you. And I have found it to my benefit that I should be in the business of just praising God and not coming up with a game plan for anything. I always try to be organized. I try to be prepared. If I'm having a staff meeting, I want to go and prepare. If I have guests coming over to my house, I want to be prepared. I want to be organized, but without a game plan. Because as long as I have a game plan, it means I'm doing some sort of managing that area of my life. And my big book says I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life. But when I start to make game plans and do that kind of stuff and kind of got in my head what this person's going to say and what I'm going to do when they say that, I'm considering myself no longer an alcoholic. I've risen above that way of thinking, that I won't fall short, that they have to follow my rules, and it's a subtle shift. And so, again, another humbling experience for me has been no game plan. I do it with this all the time. I do it in many areas of my life. But where I will fall short is when I'm meeting the family, like with the holidays coming up. And you're going to go get around your family, and you get along with this one, you don't get along with that one. So you already got the game plan on how this is going to play out and what you're going to do when Uncle Joe gets drunk. Well, I'm going to get up and walk out. Well, that's a game plan. And maybe that's not God's game plan. So to be a clean slate, completely open, and let him determine what I'm supposed to do all the time. And so we can talk about step 11 with all the mechanics, all the methodology, and we can have a spitting contest as to who meditates longer and who writes more inventory and who prays longer and who's a better church member. But really, that's wonderful. But what am I doing in my own personal life? What's that really look like? Do I walk, as I said a couple of weeks ago, great spiritual practice walk with the spirit of gratitude for everything, appreciation for everything? Walking not only with conscious contact with God, which means I'm aware of God, but constant contact with God in all I do. Because when I'm walking like that, and that's who my beingness is, when I fall short, and I'm going to fall short, it's that quiet guiding voice that says, go fix that now. And gives me the courage to go back and make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. So what I found with the 11th step, 10 and 11, the strict spiritual disciplines in 10 and 11, where the road has gotten very narrow and the gate we're going to walk through is very, very small. And we can't pass through there with baggage. We got to be pruned really down to the bark. That with all the stuff that we get to do, what does it really look like in my own personal life? What happens when something that isn't pleasant gets dropped in my lap? What happens when I'm met with some sort of controversy, when someone's pushing back or challenging me unfairly, or perhaps criticizes or condemns us? What do we do with that? What happens when the boss says, well, you're no longer needed here, or he or she says, I'm moving on? Or we get caught with our mate practicing infidelity and our heart is broken. How do I handle that stuff? It really is a testimony to where I am in the growth and growing in understanding and effectiveness with steps 10 and 11. It's easy for me to be spiritual when I have a load of money on me, a new car, expensive cigar, everything's going good, everything's clicking, all the ducks in a row, everything looks good. Bill says the goose hung high, everything was going good. It's easy to be spiritual. Well, easier. But what about when that stuff's not going on? What about when I have no money in my pocket and I have no job, I'm looking for a job, I can't find a job, he or she just left, whatever it might be, disturbance, how am I doing with that? And that will really bear witness for others about my relationship with God. I'm really chopping wood and carrying water. Again, it's easy to be spiritual and things are going good. I don't want to be any place God is not. Now, we can say, well, God's every place. Yeah, we know that, but we can, in a sense, dismiss ourselves from God's presence. You know, we have that secret sex life. We have that secret life where we really believe God's not paying attention. But I don't want to be anywhere he's not. And I want to be an open book. And I want to be taken apart. I want to be pruned. I want to be right for the next junk that walks in the door. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. To improve, which means I've had some contact with God. What am I doing to enhance the experience? Now, I'm one who writes lots of inventory. And quite frankly, I can't see how someone could walk a strict spiritual discipline life without writing inventory. It's what the book says. It's what all my teachers have told me. It's way beyond just going to a meeting and getting a couple of handshakes, and we have the fellowship of the Spirit, but what about the spirit of the fellowship? If the fellowship starts to get sick, where's the spirit within the fellowship? We have 100, say, drunks who are completely untreated, not even paying attention to God. No reflection or contemplation when they're outside of a meeting about God. So what's that really look like for me? What's my practice look like? What am I doing to enhance? Can I walk in gratitude when I'm out of work looking for work and I don't have a lot of money on me and I just might make my rent? Can I still walk with gratitude that I'm still sober and I'm still a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and, oh my God, with all of this stuff coming at me, because life will come at us and life can be unfair at times, I'm still grateful. Because what I have found with all the stuff, and I've had it, near bankruptcy, divorce, lots of bad things, health scares, friends dying, poor little Hunter's gone. I mean, things like this happen. Is there an undercurrent of stillness? We don't know how, we don't know when, we don't know where, but just an undercurrent of stillness or godliness that somehow, some way, I'm going to get through this. But I'm not going to get through it alone. I'm going to have friends to lean on who insist I lean on them. but they're also human power. There's something greater, something deeper at work in my life, and you can feel that. When we talk about free will, you know, the third step, I turn my will over and we say we take it back. I don't think we can ever really take back something from God, like I'm a God bigger than God. Okay, God, I'm taking that out of your hands now. We're just doing what we want to go back into self-will. But there's a little moment that when something happens, she leaves. We get fired. Money's tight. Someone's sick. There's a moment, a brief moment, where we can go left into the drama again. Oh, my God, it's happening again. I can't believe after all I've done, we get into that. And we open up old wounds that we thought were closed. And we only get around people who have similar wounds so we can nurse our wounds together. There's a woman who calls that you're getting another wound mate. You look for wound mates. Or in that little second, I can go this way, knowing somehow, some way, that feeling in here in the soul, I'm going to be okay. This is not good. It's bad. It looks really dark right now. But something in here is telling me, just keep chopping wood and carrying water, Pete. You're going to be okay. And then we pay attention to God's greater plan. As I call it, this big tapestry of our own individual life. If we look back, if we're sober while we look back over our life, there are things that were unpleasant that happened to us, but pruned us, made us stronger for another event that was going to happen. Perhaps to sponsor someone. After I came out of my divorce, I had guys coming out of the woodwork going through a divorce. I was able to help them. Is that why I went through a divorce? I don't know. But I know it was of greater service to the guys who didn't know who to talk to. And so I can interpret as what appears to be painful as bad. And yet God doesn't look at it that way. God's creating this huge piece for me to live in, this big mosaic with all these things happening so I can flourish in his light and be of greater service to others. This is way beyond what the book is saying. Last week I said the steps are like titles on a chapter in a book. First chapter, how it works. Second chapter, live and let live. But there's a whole bunch of information underneath that. Like when we read a book, we have a title of a chapter. We don't know what the chapter is about until we get in there. There's layers to it. So when we look at step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. Stop there. What's that look like? What have I been doing to grow in understanding and effectiveness to enhance this gift that was freely given to me? Think about that for a minute. Take a guy like me with all the damage I did. I'm not the worst guy in the room. I'm not the best guy in the room. But my damage towards others, forget myself. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they give me an opportunity first to get right with my Creator and then to grow in understanding and effectiveness and transcend this worldly thing into a godliness place. And we have people out there who are going to work every day trying to pay their rent and raise their kids and never exposed to God. And grinding it out, wondering when is it going to get better. And we walk in, busted up, we rip people apart, we rip people off. We've just been one big mistake, a big F on the report card. And we come in here and we say, here's Shangri-La, you want Utopia, yes or no? For free. The whole thing doesn't make sense. So I got to take that and say, well, what's the greater purpose to this? Why am I getting this wonderful gift? Why was my life spared? I'm no better than a young fellow like Hunter. I'm no worse. But why was my life spared? Perhaps God rescued him because he was just in so much torment. And says, you're coming home. And for me, he says, you need to go teach. I don't know. But I'm here by inches and seconds that I'm here. And that, I mean that quite literally, inches and seconds. And a lot of us have had the guns to our heads, the gun to the stomach, the overdoses, the stabbings, the just getting out of Dodge just in time. And here we are. And you know what we do when we're here? We complain. We do nothing. And we have this thing in AA says, wait, for don't leave till the miracle happens. Like it's going to walk in the door and say, here's the miracle. And I lose sight of the fact that I'm sitting in a meeting called Alcoholics Anonymous, which makes no sense to start with, based on how I was. I come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sitting in a chair, and I'm sober. And I go to another meeting, I'm sober another day. And I got 3 days and 5 days. The miracle has taken place. I'm not drinking. Because I was always drinking. Even when I didn't want to drink, I drank. And there was no control, no power, no choice, nothing involved. It owned me. And moreover, life owned me. It was my master. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and life is still my master, but my lips say I serve God. How could I do that? How could I worship two masters? You can't. So what am I doing if I'm here 10 days? If I'm here 20 days? It's too soon to do the steps. It's too soon to get a sponsor. It's too soon to get involved. Nonsense. Because alcoholism doesn't care. Alcoholism is at the front door saying, we'll get him on the 11th day. It's lurking. It's moving in. It's constantly, we're constantly on alcoholism's radar. It knows exactly where we are. It knows exactly how we're thinking. In fact, it's thinking for us. It knows exactly what's going on. Crack in the armor, go in. And then you find somebody missing in the meeting, like Hunter. Bless his heart. Do I think I've risen above my alcoholism where I won't get taken in or hijacked by my alcoholism? I've been divorced. I've had girlfriends cheat on me. I've cheated on girlfriends. I've been a victim of infidelity, and I've been the guy. Bankruptcy, no money, can't get a job, sober. 10 years sober. I can't find work. I got no money. The bank doesn't care. I'm a good guy. They send the bills. The mortgage company, I don't care. You're a good guy and you go to AA. Where's the mortgage? Or we take your house. And an employer is not going to hire me because I'm sober 10 years in AA. They don't care. And you say, God, why the trials of Job? But there was always something underneath all of it for me. And that's why I feel so blessed. When I first gotten here, I had big book teachers who drove me right to God. No 90 days and hang out for 90 days. There's no such animal. In fact, in the first portion of my big book, there's nothing about 90 meetings in 90 days. It might appear in the stories, with your personal experiences. But in the program, the basic text, pages 1 to 164, which have remained unchanged, there's no talk of 90 meetings in 90 days. What my teachers did was get me to God right now. Because they had been through stuff and they knew, hey, it might be okay now, but in 6 months, a year, we don't know. Things might happen. How prepared are you? How loaded is the tool belt? How much God you got flowing through you? Conversely, what about when we come into good stuff like lots of money? The relationship, where you finally meet someone, you know this is him or this is her. We're just going to grow old to you. You know it. And you do. And the babies come and the house comes. And all good stuff. How do we handle that? Because we're not too good at that either. In fact, I'm not good at any of it. I'm just not good. That was painful to say just now, I gotta tell you. Some new guy saying, now why is he speaking for? Then why do we tell folks live life on life's terms? Live life. I'm in the treatment center business. I'm going to scream one day if another therapist tells a new guy, live life on life's terms. He did. That's why he's sitting in front of you in his 15 treatment center. The book says God's terms are simple and easy. They're not difficult. I live life on life's terms this way. When I wake up, I get drunk. Good day, bad day, middle day, doesn't care. I'm getting drunk. If there's something on the horizon, I'm definitely getting drunk. The problem is once I get drunk, I can't stay, I stay drunk. I can't get undrunk unless I wind up in a treatment center or a detox. I live life on life's terms. If I have $500 in my pocket now, I'm envious of you with $600. And therefore, I have to throw you under a bus. I have to character assassinate you because I'm jealous of you. If I'm a single guy and you meet a nice lady, I'm saying, way to go, good for you, I hope you enjoy yourself, and I go home and I loathe you and I loathe even more my life. What's wrong with me? That's life on life's terms. And then I meet her and then I have to have another her. I have to have two of them. I'm making a good salary, but I can beat my boss for a couple of bucks. After all, he's rich. This is how I do life on life's terms, and I always get drunk. Now, life on God's terms is a complete opposite of what I just described and more, which means it's going to challenge everything I thought I was and everything I believed in, which is exactly what is supposed to happen. And there's going to be times, as I have, where we push back, because it's frightening to go from what we know to a place we don't know, the world of the spirit, where everything changes. But once we taste the honey, we can't return. Once I start to experience the abundance of God, the abundance of God, and what that feels like, not knowing God, not knowing Scripture, not knowing Big Book, that's completely different. That's what we do in school. We memorize stuff. But truly experiencing this power called God and beginning to practice fidelity to God a day at a time where there's nothing before my God. I worship nothing other than my God. Something happens. We're made different from the inside and it manifests out. We are no longer the same. We don't look the same. We don't sound the same. We don't talk the same. We don't dress the same. Everything's different. When our book says our roots are grasping new soil, this is where it happens by the time we enter the world of the Spirit. So 1 through 9 is about getting all of that ready to step into the world of the Spirit, because God's about to put me to work. If he hasn't done it sooner with sponsees and stuff, the work now shows up. First pitch, first game. Game on. I need to be ready, because God's going to put me out there and do a lot of work. And it's not a 9-to-5 gig. It's for our lifetime, the book says. I think it was Monday night. I was sharing that for me, sober 28 years, there seems to be, it's a while now, a greater sense of urgency for me to be more right with God, to work with these disciplines with more passion, to work with other books, to be more accountable to my sponsor. Going through the work again, there seems to be just a sense of urgency for me, and I need to listen to that guiding voice, because it's not one of those voices that are screaming at me. It's that undercurrent voice that says, come to me. Last week I was sharing, I was doing a meditation. And I sat meditation, and I had all those characters. I had the entrepreneur guy. I had the AA guy. I had the guy who likes to run and keep in shape guy. I had the boyfriend guy. I had 45 people sitting in my meditation with me, and they're all talking at once. And I'm, oh, God, please, I got so much noise. And it was so clear. Just teach. I got the rest. Okay, I'm good to go. Cleared it all out for me. Just go teach. I got everything else. And I reflected on that. With all the struggles I felt were struggles, God always allowed me to land on my feet all the time. Never once did he pull the rug. Never once did I drown. And all some of those, well, let me say this, all those difficult times, and there have been really times where my back was pushed up against the wall and I couldn't see a way out, just surrounded by darkness. They turned out to be the most intimate moments of my life with God, because there was nowhere else to go but God. And what came out of that was a tremendous amount of pruning and a deeper relationship with God, a deeper sense of consciousness with God, which made me more effective when the new guy comes up to me and says, can you sponsor me? I know the hole you're in, and I know how to get out. And so God sharpens the tools. Well, one thing I had to get away from was interpreting something that is painful as bad. If I think it's good, it might be bad. If I think it's bad, it might be good. So I had to get away from interpreting. Who am I to interpret what God is sending down the pipe? How great do I think I am? How have I risen above God's spirituality where I can interpret each situation? We do it with ourselves. We size people up and we interpret their progress. We interpret what they should or shouldn't be doing. Well, how do I know the walk you're on? Who am I to interpret anything? My job is when you come to me and you share, my life's in shambles, and then I give you information on how to walk out of it. I was going through a divorce a bunch of years ago, and I'll tell you how this looks on the other side. I had some friends who they're acquaintances now. I thought they were friends. We went to meetings together. We broke bread together. We hung out together. You know, AA buds, running partners in AA. And I went through a divorce, and I was brokenhearted. And I think I've shared this. I felt like I failed as a man. I couldn't keep a woman. She was addicted to alcohol and cocaine, and I should have been more of a man to stop all of that, and that's when I had to go to Al-Anon. Well, some of these folks who I was kind of hanging with in AA and running with in AA, when I'm going through this dark time in my life and my back's up against the wall and I got this big hole in the soul now, and you go through the mourning when you get divorced. This person's no longer with you. There's a whole mourning that goes on. And the role of the husband is fired. And there's a part of you that still wants to be a husband. So you look for next Mrs. Right and you jump right into a relationship. It's called a rebound. And you got to play husband again. Some of these guys weren't around anymore. In fact, some of them didn't even want to hang with me anymore. They were viewing me as a fraud, as a failure. Pete, the big book guy, is going through a divorce, probably doing something wrong. And worse than that, they were starting to gossip about me and throw me under a bus. And worse than that, I went and see my grand sponsor give a talk in Staten Island one time. And there were a couple in the room, and I walked in, and I waved to my friends. And they kind of just looked at me and gave me this, you know, hey, how you doing? I said, what's going on here? They were interpreting my life. They were interpreting what I was going through. And see how unfair that is. So before I take the speck out of your eye, I need to remove the plank from mine. Let God interpret. My job here is to be of service, maximum service to God and those about me. Do I judge? Yes, I'm guilty of it. Do I critique? Absolutely. That's the flawed character. The difference is I go to God, ask him what to do, and I go back and make it right. And that's the difference between the old guy and what you have in front of you. This is not a perfect product here, trust me. A lot of cracks in this armor. And it's a lot older. But I'm striving. Step 11. Well, back on page 25, it says, the great fact is just this, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our life. How we look at people, how we look at the world around us, everything is shifted. And the central part, fact of our life is our relationship with this creator. That's right in here. That is the most important thing. And because of that, of our the way we look at the world has changed. We are not looking at the world through the old eyes anymore. We're looking at the world through God's eyes, hearing the world through God's ears, speaking God's words. Therefore, our actions look godly most of the time. Step 11. I'm going to go to on awakening tonight. It says, on awakening, we think about the 24 hours ahead. I consider my plans for the day. And before I begin, I ask God to direct my thinking. It's really important that I ask God to direct my thinking because I don't want to direct my thinking because all the negative stuff I just explained a minute ago is about to happen again. And in step 11, I learned the difference between managing my life and proper use of the will. And I'm going to go back and forth and make mistakes from time to time, but what really counts is me seeking God to get this right. And sometimes I think I'm going to hear God's voice, and it really is. It's one of those voices sitting at my table. But the point is I'm still listening for God. I'm trying to hear God. I'm doing everything with inventory, prayer, meditation to hear God. And at some point, I begin to hear that guiding voice. And it doesn't sound like those other voices. This voice has got clout. This voice, you know when it speaks to you. In fact, when you get a godly message, usually you don't have to write it down because it's just with you. Something just spoke to you other than those other voices, other than human power. And when we start to follow through on directions, it speaks loudly for the power that can't be spoken of. That makes sense. When I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I remember one of the very first times I prayed sober. There was a part of me that was wanting to do this. I was so saddened and looking back on how did my life get this bad? This wasn't supposed to happen. And so grateful that I'm sober and I'm not in the streets. I remember my little mantra was whatever I was experiencing, I used to say, it beat the streets. It beat the streets. It beat the streets. especially when you sleep in abandoned buildings. It beat the streets. But I remember praying and thinking, is God even going to listen to me? Does he even know I'm here? Does he even want to even deal with me after all the stuff I just did? 28 years later, we can walk around and say, or even sooner, one of the greatest gifts we have is knowing that we're known by our Creator. And so I began this practice of prayer in the morning. And I began this practice of prayer to close up the night. And that's all I was doing, simple prayer. God, please keep me clean and sober today. God, thank you for keeping me clean and sober today. I didn't know much what else to say. In fact, if I would have said more, it would have been strictly petitioning. But we get a pass when we're new because we don't know what we're doing. We're trying to have a conversation with God, which means you get an A+. Shortly into recovery, I find a sponsor who's big on step 11 and the meditation piece. So I learned quickly from a good teacher, but I didn't really know how to do this. And through a friend of a friend, this woman taught me how to meditate. And she showed me posture, and she showed me breath, and meditation is part of our 11-step practice. How many meetings have we gone to in the last month that the topic was meditation? We're just going to talk about meditation tonight. I was, I think I was in Mississippi for a conference, and I had to do a talk. It was like Sunday morning, and Saturday afternoon they asked me to do a talk on step 11, a little workshop. And I was sharing my meditation practice in step 11. And some cat walks from the back with his big book under his arm. He's walking right towards me. I say, here we go. And he says, the way you describe meditation is Zen, is Eastern philosophy, has no place in Alcoholics Anonymous. How could you possibly do that? And my reply was, thanks for sharing. Have a nice day. And I left. Well, the next morning, Sunday morning, I'm giving my talk. I get done with my talk, and here comes Joey Big Book walking right down the middle of the aisle, right, with his big book. And he's walking right towards me. And he comes up to me and says, can you sponsor me? So when we talk about meditation, Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not going to bring in outside literature. I'm not going to tell us to do something outside of AA. But our book says they're helpful books also. Be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer, which means I have the freedom to go outside of Alcoholics Anonymous and learn stuff, see their experiences, which is what I did. And at the beginning, I had problems with my church. I was going to non-denominational stuff, Christian stuff, all sorts of, just this one big circle I was doing, seeking, reading books, all of this. And it took me back to my Catholic Church. It took me back to my God. But we need to talk a little bit about meditation because meditation is mentioned in the 11th step, but we don't talk about it. But we have to talk about it because it's mentioned in the 11th step, but we don't talk about it. And quite frankly, meditation could be just getting still and breathing, and that's it. We don't have to om and chant and go on a mountain and shave our head. But if that's God's call for you, you'll be on a mountain chanting, oming, and shaved head. How do we know? We don't. And if we're sitting here and say, well, that's crazy, that would never happen, then I'm God, because we don't know. We just don't know. In fact, I'm not supposed to know. It's none of my business. My business is the chopping wood and carrying water. And so we need to talk about how do we meditate? Do we meditate? And to share some of our experiences as the result of meditation, of going in. Very often, we have bells, we have whistles, we have incense, we have all sorts of stuff. We have meditation music, we have meditation stuff. It's great. I have a bunch of it, and I used it for years. But here's the question. Is it possible that the bells, the chimes, the incense, the sage, all of it, all wonderful stuff, I love all of it, is actually a distraction from hearing the voice of God because we just might hear it and we just might not like what God has to give me. So I have all this stuff that's disguised in me being so spiritual because I got sage burning, I got gongs going off, I got meditation music, I got a big band, and I got a rock band, I got everything going on. I'm chanting, I'm oming, which is wonderful. I've worked with that for years. But is it possible it drowns out God's voice and it has now become a distraction? Have I tried meditating with nothing? Just me and breath and see what the Creator has for me. Because if I get close enough to my breath and I become my breath, something changes. I start to hear differently. And all the worldly clamors, because that's what they are, seem to just drift away. Oh, they're coming back. As soon as we get up and walk out the door and hit 95, there they are. As soon as you walk into work, worldly clamors. But now I'm going through the worldly clamors different. I'm not a part of worldly clamors. And so it's really important that I have a posture and breath. I have no headphones in my ears. I have no sunglasses on. I have no baseball hat on. I'm not, the TV's not on. There's nothing. I can't take anything to God. I got to stand before my Creator, if you will, in the raw, with nothing. Because when I cross over, when He calls me home, I can't take all that stuff with me. And He's really not too interested. He likes the effort. But I have to say, He's more interested in how was my behavior? Did I shout His name from the roof, or did I deny Him? Did I treat those who were less fortunate than me better, or did I just step over them? Some of that clarity will come to us in meditation when all the noise shuts down and we take a look at, where am I right now? How am I doing? My sponsor, Mark, used to always say, how are we doing? Not how the job is, not how the relationship is, not how the money is. We'll have that conversation later. But how are you doing? Meaning, what's going on in here? How am I doing? And we know it when there's no music, no chimes, no bells, and we're just sitting with breath. You can feel disturbance or you can feel ease. You just know. And we start to touch that undercurrent. I call it undercurrent. It's way below the surface. That stillness, that okayness. I don't know how. None of my business. I don't know when. None of my business. But somehow, some way, I'm going to be okay. I'm doing all the work they're asking me to do. I'm of service to anyone. And we can look back and see, look at all the bullets we dodged and how we got here. And great things have happened for me out of meditation. Many things. That just assured me of God's love and mercy for a guy like me. And how quickly we're forgiven. Instantly we are forgiven for any wrongs we've done. So my job is to kind of take that view, that outlook on the way He has on my life to others. And for me, quite frankly, folks, this is really 11-step work. We can spend an hour, I can read the whole 11-step to you and analyze each sentence, which is a place for it, and interpret the book for you, and there's a place for that. But I think if I was sitting there, I want to hear a little bit of that. More important, I want to hear how you're doing it. If one of you guys were speaking, well, how's that look in your life? Same thing when we do fourth step. We can break down mechanics, and we have to do that. We've got to talk about mechanics. But I want to know, when you were stuck on a resentment, how'd you get through it while you were writing it? When you had that fear that gripped you while you were writing it, how'd you do it? How'd you even get passionate and motivated to do a fourth step? That bears witness. That stepped in weight. It always has been for me. So on awakening, I literally mean on awakening, when the eyes open, and I didn't plan this. This was given to me counting days. I found myself grateful one morning. I woke up. I'm in a dorm with about, 25 guys and 25 on the other. I mean, there's all these people in a halfway house. It wasn't pretty. Neither were they. And I woke up and my eyes opened. I said, thank you, God. This beats the streets. I didn't have a phone. There were no cell phones back then. You had to use the house phone, which was down in the hallway, and you had to go ask your counselor, can I make a phone call? And they would give you a time to make a call, and the house manager would make sure, if you missed it by a couple of minutes, you got no call till the next week. You asked permission for everything. We ate in a cafeteria, and it was, wasn't pretty. Beat the streets. But somehow I found gratitude for that. So I started this life of prayer. And I was saying earlier, I met this teacher who began to show me about meditation. And incredible things have come out of that. I remember sitting in this sober house, halfway house. And I prayed. And my prayer was becoming more passionate. 12 and 12 says, dependent upon God will give us an independence in life. I was starting to taste some of that. I was listening to the elders who were talking a lot about a prayer life. And you start to pray with more passion. And I remember, here I am in this halfway house. And it wasn't pretty, and it was what it was. And the first time I got hit with this, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And I was able to look beyond what was in front of me. Fast forward, working with the sponsor who taught me meditation along with this woman and how to meditate, posture and breath, posture and breath, posture and breath, over and over and over again. It was really important I do that. Remove all obstacles, posture and breath. And that same sort of sense of I'm going to be okay came back in waves. And answers to questions that I had that were at me for years were given to me when the ground was fertile enough. See, we plow the field and God does the growing, the same way a doctor does the surgery and God does the healing. So we do the chopping wood and carrying wood, and when God says the ground's fertile, here's the answer to that riddle. Here's why this happened. And I've been able to get some of those, and I'm no special AA, spoke in a wheel. But the ground got fertile enough, and God can hear the heart when it hurts, knows the soul when it's shaking, and will give us an answer. Because the soul knows what it needs. And I should be seeking that which my soul craves. And that's God. And we work with this power of meditation, the sacred silence of meditation, where I go into darkness to see and silence to hear, and I hear one voice. And God says, put this one together for you. I will put this one together for you. It happened twice with the riddles of my mom. And the power of prayer, an example was given to me in an airport. Where I'm working right now, the people I work with, I know these guys, they're wonderful. But it was still that jumping off. Do I make this move? Everything was saying, make the move. But there was still that doubt and skepticism. I'm pointing here. It was really up here. Father, what do I do? What do I do? He said, make the move. I got you. You're around people who talk about me all day long. I paved the road with gold here. And sure as anything, the first day I go into work, I walk in, and one of the guys says, let's pray before we start our day. We circled up, and we prayed. I said, thank you, Father. I couldn't see that. But I pray and I meditate. And God says, here, I'm putting this together for you. And there's nothing wrong with striving and plowing the field. Your hands get blistered and bloody, your knees hurt, and your back hurts, and you're plowing the field. I'd rather bear the agony of waiting for God than have the agony of going through life without God. So give me a pick and shovel, I'll start now. Because I know He's the one giving me the strength and the endurance to do the work. So on awakening, my eyes open, as it did in that halfway house. Thank you, God, for this day. And that's how I start my day now. Open up, thank you, Father, some more words. But thank you, Father, for this day. I ask Him for some things, the mercy to stay clean and sober. And then I get up and I go to my meditation room, my prayer room, which is half an office and half a prayer room. I have an altar. I have a meditation mat. I have stuff on that mat that represents that pictures of my God. I have some Eastern stuff off the altar. I have sage and all that other stuff, all up there, candles. I have so many trinkets that people have given me. I have a picture of a cathedral. I was working in Staten Island. I got off the office, second floor one time in this building in Staten Island, New York. I get off, and there's this picture that was never there before. One of these big poster pictures, like this big, of this cathedral. And I was stopped in my tracks. It was 8 in the morning. And I was drawn into the picture, and it looked like a cathedral I had visited before, and I don't know where. My old sponsor said past life experience. I've been in this place. I know I've been there, but I can't think where. And every morning I get off the elevator, so I went upstairs to the corporate office. I says, where do you get the pictures from? They thought I was nuts. I need that picture. I ordered it. I had it framed. It's above my altar. It's my little place of refuge. an old brick cobblestone altar, wooden chairs. It's beautiful. I have pictures of my brothers, pictures of my dad, I have pictures of my entire lineage up above, all the way back. The only picture I don't have is of Dr. Bob. I have that 8x10 of Dr. Bob that everyone has. All my teachers up there. This is important. This stuff speaks to us. And even with that, when I go to God, that stays where it is, and I meet God alone in the raw. So far, so good. I hope I haven't gotten, hope I've been made right-sized and haven't gotten too big for my AA. And if I ever do, I please pray someone calls me on that. I have a sponsor who usually does that. I remember once my sponsor says, "Are you still a member of this fellowship?" I was highly insulted because I had too many answers from this one particular night. I know what I need to do. Mick, I know what I need to do. He says, "Are you still a member of this fellowship?" I said, "Okay, back up. Be teachable." That's all I got. Peace.
Can we thank the speaker one more time? Now the secretary will be doing the secretary's report.
Hi, my name's Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Carlton to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hello, everyone. My name is Keith. I'm grateful to be a recovering alcoholic and addict. Recovered. We're not cured of alcoholism, recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for a lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. God bless you, young lady. We're now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Can you guys stand up for us, please? Everyone. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print, Big Book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. And before I finish this, I have a 3-year medallion for Jessica tonight. She has been coming to this home group regularly. She is in the trenches. She is working with many girls, and I'd like to hear what she's got. See her, see how she did it.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jessica. I wasn't expecting this tonight, but those of you who don't know my story, I struggled in and out of these rooms for over 13 years, and I mean struggled. I wanted this so badly, but nothing I could do or say, nothing I tried, nothing I heard spoke to me, and I couldn't get it. I hated myself, I hated my life, I hated everything. I was tortured, I was miserable, hence I never got any time. 3 years ago, I was in another institution for the millionth time, having escaped death by a small hair. I had tried to kill myself, and my higher power had other plans for me. I had never prayed before. I had never prayed. My sponsor, over and over again, said, get on your knees and pray. And I did a lot of her suggestions, but I never did that one. For some reason, at that moment, I was ready. I got on my knees, and I prayed. And after that, I stopped hating myself. And God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. If I am here, there is something bigger than me. That is all I know. I'm just a person, but I am here. This meeting changed my life. It changed my life because it showed me the things I was doing in my life wrong, that I wasn't chopping wood and carrying water. I was living in my ego. I wasn't living for God. I wasn't giving back to the God that gave to me. So I changed, and I followed instruction that was clearly given. It was in my heart the whole time. I just wasn't listening. I reached into my heart. And I have changed. I have changed everything. My life is so different. My life is so peaceful. It is a simple life, but it is a life that gives me so much pleasure because I'm not in pain. I see everything different, and I'm not tortured anymore. This is because I asked for God's help, and it was just a simple prayer. Please, God, help me. That was it, twice a day. I meditate now. I'm actually in school to be a meditation teacher because I'm an alcoholic and I tend to overdo everything. But let me tell you, it was the simple things that worked for me and coming to this meeting and really, really listening and changing. Anyway, truly blessed and grateful for a power greater than myself. And thank you, Peter.
Tonight's session and all sessions are podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night big book study. And those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
leaking. much accumulation. Yeah. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, the dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, of people going by, I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying, and watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. What a wonderful world. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.